Caller from 202, you're on live from the Black Channel. Well, you're on live with the Black Channel. Live from the Black Channel, you're calling in. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Yes, my name is Ronnie Greenfield, calling from Washington, D.C.
Okay, Ronnie, let me get you to take your phone off speaker or whatever you got going on right now, because I want everybody to be able to hear you, and your volume is really, really bad right there. So can you take it off speaker or Bluetooth or whatever you got it on?
Yeah, give me one.
Because I'm sure what you're going to say is very, very important, and I want everybody to hear every scintilla.
Okay. All right, can you hear me better now?
Yes, brother. What's on your mind?
Nothing much, Mr. Black. Actually, I was listening, and I didn't hear anything that you said. I've been sitting here trying to figure out what was wrong with the reception.
Okay, well, not really sure what was going on there either, but we've been discussing about the 20th anniversary of apartheid ending and a business called Play where they are leasing Legos just like Netflix does on a monthly subscription. So that's basically been what I've been talking about so far, but we don't do topics here on the Black Channel. We just do Black intelligence, so anything that's on your mind, fine.
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't have anything in particular on my mind. I just wanted to listen in, but since I'm here, I do want to say that your broadcast over the last week or two have been extremely powerful broadcast. You said some groundbreaking things, man, and I think that more people need to pay attention to what you're saying and stop focusing on personality so much, because Black people are very personality-driven people. We're not objective thinkers. We're not objective listeners, okay? So when I, you know, try to, you know, pass your information along to people, you know, the first thing they'll say is, well, we don't like this guy. We have a problem with this. We have a problem with that. My question is he telling the truth? And is what he's saying going to help you or hurt you? Can you answer that? Well, we don't like him because of this and that. Well, that's not why we're here. We're not here to be liked. We're not here to make friends. We're here to improve upon our situation as Black people, because our situation is very, very detrimental right now. So that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us here, brother. It's very, very important that we as Black people understand that everybody out there is squatting up, and they're squatting up on the sides of haves and have-nots. Now, you can keep coming to the table with a ton of excuses and a ton of procrastinations and every whiny excuse you want to, but understand, these other people have no mercy for your excuses. They have no pity for you. Nobody is taking pity on you for coming up with excuses. Everybody only wants to hear about your solutions and your answers. We are the people who give solutions and answers. Nobody wants to hear why you don't have the money or the capital. Everybody wants to hear what are your answers. The phone lines are now open. This is the only haven of intelligent Black thought. You need to be giving us a call here at 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is your personal access code to the Blackest radio program in existence. Caller from 731, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah, this is D. Hello?
Okay. Everybody's calling in tonight from their Obama phones, and they are just really muddled. What is your name again?
D. This is D. D. Brown.
Okay. You say your name is D?
Yeah, D. D-E-E-D-O-W-N. D. Brown.
And where are you calling from, D?
I'm calling from Philadelphia.
All right, D, and what's on your mind, brother?
Well, what's on my mind, and this is what I don't understand, that everybody acting like about this man, this basketball owner, talking about how prejudiced what he was. But you know what? It was already prejudiced from the beginning, from the get-go. It was already there. So my thing is, why is we acting like we don't know that it just came here? It was already there. So what's the cause of it? These people was prejudiced, they was owners or whatever they may be, bank owners or house owners or what. Prejudice has been here since day one. That's what's on my mind. And I can't understand Why is we acting like it never was that? Hello?
Well, I don't think that anybody is acting as if prejudice was not there. I think they are taking it as some sort of confirmation of, oh, we always knew it was like this. My problem is, if you always knew it was like this, then you are just like his girlfriend, Stiviano. Why have you been supporting something that you always knew was like this? It's not that they're saying that they didn't know. They're trying to say that they did know. Oh, we knew it was all, this was always beneath the surface. Okay, then why have you all been such rabid basketball fans then?
Well, I never was a basketball fan. I'm not a basketball fan. The only thing I believe is the truth is the truth. And a fact is a fact. It's not about I'm being a basketball fan. I'm all about the truth and reality. Hello?
Okay, brother, you don't need to keep saying hello, okay?
Well,
it's really not necessary. If your call drops, you will know it's been dropped.
Okay, I'm responding.
You'll know. But used to being listened to is the problem. Black people are not accustomed to other people just being quiet and listening while they talk. So black folk are used to having to shout over people and talk over people, which is why I don't allow that here. Because intelligent people do not have to shout over other people. Intelligent people can make a point and be heard and then be quiet and listen while someone else makes a point and be heard. And then the audience can determine who has the better point or whatever the case might be or what the real points are. But here, we actually listen to people. So that silence you're hearing, that tells us a lot about folks' upbringings, and that's why I want to bring them to this place so that they can get something different. You can finally be actually heard and listened to for the first time in your life. It's a wonder. The sound of silence when you're talking, it's going to take some time for you all to get used to that, but eventually you're going to learn to relish it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm just saying from what I just got through saying, so it's just that I'm going to stay on that because everybody, you know, got their own opinion. Everybody tied it to their own opinion, regardless of what they say or what they do. So my thing is, I don't know, I'm going to keep saying this because this is what I believe. We acting like you people saying, well, what are we going to do about it? We're doing a lot of talk. But we ain't really, we actually doing that. We all talking what we should do, but I never seen no actions. There have been things that I did and try to help the black community. But the more we talk about what the white people doing, how come we not doing nothing for ourselves as individuals? We need to start coming together as one, as a union, as a whole.
Well, when you say, understand something, though. When you say the words we, who are you referring to?
I'm talking about the black community. That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Now, you have to understand, you can't make progress unless everybody has the same frame of reference. The next question would be, who is the black community?
As the race, as one, as whole, the brothers, the sisters.
I am going to submit to you today that based on things like what we see from the players on the Clippers, based on things we've seen, like the reactions of the, quote, fans, based on things like what we see from the reaction to how popular my program is versus other people who talk about absolutely banal and inconsequential things, I submit to you today, brother, that we are going to need to totally redefine and finally assign a definition of what, quote, the black community is.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a term that's being thrown around and everybody is assuming that everybody understands what that means, that means you are making an assumption that everybody understands the words black community the way that you do. And what I'm saying to you is that a person needs to qualify to be part of a community. That's not something you are just born as. It's like respect. You have to earn that. And without that occurring, I don't see how you're going to get anything else done. With everybody, we have 40 million black people, and guess what? That means we have 40 million different definitions of what the black community is. Everybody wants to argue about it. When I say black first, Negroes want to argue.
Mm-hmm.
No other group of people on the planet will argue with you if you say Greek first, Spanish first, Jew first, Asian first, Arab first, Indian first, Mexican first. Everybody else, there's no argument with them. We say black first, and other groups of people don't argue with us. It's only black people who want to argue with us.
And why is that?
Because everybody is looking for their chance to be massa's boy. Everybody is waiting in line for massa to come out the plantation and throw some cornbread on the ground so that they can fight and scrap for it, because they would prefer to live on their knees than to thrive on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth about the average black person. Black people, we would rather live on our knees, groveling and eating the dirt, rather than act be treated like human beings. We would prefer to do that. Anywhere you go on this earth, that's what you see from black people. It doesn't matter where you go.
Okay.
There is no place on this planet where black people are standing proud and ready to die for being black. Nowhere. I dare you to show it to me. Because if you can show that to me, you can show me a thriving black community somewhere. But you can't do that. And that is the problem. It doesn't actually exist. That's the problem. Now, we can try to look it up later, but right now, it's not there. It's not there.
So let me ask you a question. Okay, where is the hope then, if it's not there?
The hope is right here. Right here. With you and me and us and we. It starts with a small group of determined people who understand exactly what needs to be done. How many people are adherents to Christianity today? 3 billion people. How did Christianity start? 12 people. 13 if you count Christ himself. It started with 12. And actually, in reality, if you really want to get to the bare bones of it as far as who were the most effective people in it, it actually started with 3. Now, we're not going to count Christ himself since that's the namesake. John, Peter, and Paul, if you really want to get technical about it, as far as who were the major moving forces in that order, not in that order, Paul, Peter, and John. So it really started with 3, if you, 3 very determined men, and what happened to all 3 of them?
Excuse me? What happened to all 3 of them?
Yes.
They died.
All 3 of them were killed. No, let's not. Let's say it correctly now. You said all 3 of them died. Let's make sure we make it very clear. They did not die of natural causes. All three of them were executed for their crime.
Right.
Let's be very, very clear about that. All of them were executed.
They were executed for what they believed in, what they stand on. Yes.
Now, outside of this place, can you find a John the Baptist, a Paul, a Peter? Can we find any of them out there?
No, it's
there's probably a few out there, but my real point is that they're not in great supply, even with 40 million of us knowing exactly how oppressed we are. And I'm telling you that that is the spirit that is missing. And that is why it starts here, brother. I'm telling you all what I've always told you, like he said from Terminator Salvation, don't ask where the resistance is. If you can hear this broadcast, and you know you're not hearing what I say anywhere else. Nobody comes back week after week after week after week consistently talking about this. This is the only place that does that. Do not ask where the resistance is. If you can hear this broadcast, you are the resistance.
I'll be.
You are. So don't look around for, well, who gets it? You're the guy who gets it. You're in Philadelphia. Okay. You are in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is featured prominently in my documentary, 7 a.m. And for those of you who are first time hearing about this, it is the only documentary in history that focuses exclusively on black socioeconomics and why we are the poorest people in the world and what we need to do about it. It's the first of its kind that ever focuses on why black people are the poorest people in the world, our lack of businesses.
Mm-hmm.
The first ever that does this. You can go ahead and get details at the website 7ammovie.com. That's 7ammovie.com. And I've been all over your city, man.
Okay.
North side, south side, I've been all over the city. Up and down Roosevelt, Front Street, Broad Street, the Historic District, Comcast Tower. We can go. I can go down the list for you.
I'm not.
That big concrete underpass on Roosevelt. When you're heading toward on 76, when you're heading towards downtown, that great big concrete underpass that back there, when you're leaving from that big spaghetti soup intersection, was that Adams and Roosevelt? I think it is. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Adams Roosevelt, yeah. Where they got that toe down Walmart and that toe down Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you some stories. That's right. How would I know all this if I hadn't been there? I've walked your blocks. I've seen your hood. I know what's going on there. Black folk ain't doing a damn thing in Philadelphia. Tell me that that's a lie. Every hotel that I booked and stayed in out there was owned by whites and Indians.
Mm-hmm.
How would I know that if I hadn't been there? Not Asians, but Indians. White folk and Indians, that's all you're going to find owning the hotels. You might find a couple of Orientals. But white folk and Indians are who run the yard. And I know because those were the only people I could spend money with. I could not spend money with my people.
Okay.
5 million people, 49% of the population is black. Black people are the majority ethnic group in Philadelphia and own and control nothing.
You're right.
I know because I've been there. I know because I spoke to Shalimar Blakely, executive director of the African American Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware African American Chamber of Commerce. I sat there and spoke to her myself. I asked the questions and I got the answers. I drove around and I could see what the answer was, but she was the last person that we actually interviewed. She was our last interview. And I was so glad that she was the last one because I had actually had a chance to drive around and look around. I thought Philadelphia was going to be something similar to Atlanta. And Atlanta ain't really nothing to write home about, to be totally honest with you. I thought Philadelphia was going to be more along the lines of that. I'll be damned. Philadelphia reminded me more of D.C. and New Orleans and control and run nothing in Philadelphia. But black folk on the majority of the city council. And the mayor's black. Can't help it when you get off the plane at Philadelphia International Airport. When you get off the plane, there's Michael Nutter's big face when you're going down the escalator. That's right. How would I know that if I had to look? Because some folks try to talk about stuff they really ain't doing and try to fool folks and think they're doing something. How would I know all this if I did not actually go in the last 12 months? How would I know all those things were there? I know they're there because that's what I saw when I was there. This is the real damn deal. So when I see that, I'm going to give you a full report at 7 a.m. We're going to do that. But, brother, you are one of the few black folk who gets it. You are one of the very few who gets it. I went to a restaurant there which shall remain nameless. I'm not going to say any names. I went to a restaurant there that shall remain nameless. I got exact restaurant now. I got good service from the Hispanics. I got good service from the white folks. I got crappy service from black females who were there. Two of them were lesbians.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll let you have the last
word. Okay, my last word is I just want to say I wouldn't, I just by myself, I want to see that it just wasn't me. You know what I mean? I just wanted to see if it just wasn't me. So that's my last word.
Thank you very much for joining us. No, brother, it's not just you. It may be just you doing something about it, but it's not just you. The phone lines are, of course, open. Everybody likes to wait till the end of the broadcast to call in. This is your opportunity to call in and speak to your brothers and sisters from around the world. We've got hundreds of people living. Black people need to commune in this way and speak about intelligent black discussion, and you need to join us. The number is 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is your personal access code to the blackest and most intelligent radio broadcast on the face of the planet today. Join us. Caller from 302, you're on live with Black Channel. Okay, we've got a lot of noise on there.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, you're on 302. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, my name is Terry, and I'm calling you from Toronto, but I'm using the VoIP to call you, so probably show a different number, I don't know. So I just happened to bump into your program, and I'm from the United Kingdom, so you probably, notice the accent is a bit different from you guys. So you already clarified one of my questions, though. I was just going to say something similar to what the other guy said. He said something about black people need to unite, and I kind of agree to that. I think black people need to unite, but you kind of clarified that there are like 40 million black people with different definition of black community. But I think it would be a good thing if that can be defined, and we black people can unite as one and assist each other, right? Help each other whenever we come across each other. I think it would be a good thing to help one another. So that's one of my points tonight, because I was in and out of your program, so I didn't really catch the full program. Another thing I was going to mention as well, and I would like you to correct me if I'm wrong, please. I'm just going to talk about the guy, Starlin, who was saying he put food on the, he feeds the black players, he gives them house, he gives them cars, things like that. I was just going to say, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I was just going to say that the reverse is the case, because these guys, he uses them as a business. This is a business, like a basketball is a business, and these guys generate income for the owner, right? So if you're saying you give food or you provide houses or something, like that for people who work for you, you kind of devalue them, you kind of underrate them, because these are the actual guys that work hard to bring income to your pocket. So those are the kind of two points I want to talk about, and if I'm wrong or if there's anything, I would really appreciate if you can give me your own feedback as well. Thank you.
Well, the thing is that he knows they are not going to bite the hand that feeds them. And that's the real thing. The bottom line is he was articulating what most people are smart enough not to say, that he knows they are not going to bite the hand that feeds them.
Sure.
That was what he was just saying to her directly. I know that I'm paying for their cars and clothes, and what I said last night. To them, the most important things are cars, clothes, and hoes. And he's saying that I'm the one who gives them that. Okay, can you turn your speakers down? I need to turn your speakers off.
Oh, I'm actually using an earpiece. And my speakers are off, but I'm using an earpiece on my phone.
Okay. What it is that he knows he's providing the money. And as long as he knows that, that's the most important thing. When he said, who makes the game? What he was doing was he was calling your bluff.
It appears you're calling back into a live show.
Caller from 718, you need to reach out your Android phone. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, sir. I'm sorry.
Did we catch you at a bad time?
No. It just seems there was a lapse of blog talk. I didn't hear anything on the other end.
Oh no! It's just the connection dropped for a little bit because it's tornado season here in Louisiana. If I lived further east, like out near Georgia and Florida and that area, it would be less of an issue. Of course, I guess I don't have to worry about hurricanes more. But I just live in a part of the United States while it doesn't have snowstorms, tornado season does last for eight months out of the year. So our season is getting started, and the weather's pretty brutal outside right now. But I do want to let everybody know that we are still here regardless. What's on your mind, brother?
Well, listening to your broadcast tonight and seeing how the LA Clippers reacted, my question to you is this. The greatest thing that Black empowerment would that be traitors and informers within our race? Would it be bigots like Sterling, or would it just be the lack of drive and motivation within Black men and Black women in general to create a business, just get out there and have that business plan and that energy and that drive and that motivation and that intelligence and put together that strategy to change their lives and of course network and change each other's lives. I mean, I had this whole sort of discussion that kind of, if anything, it made me scratch my head on one of the posts that you had put out there where it was just about two suits you put out there. One was wrinkled, the other was nicely pressed. And the idea is that, you know, you don't want to go out there making a presentation of yourself like you're going to a court date. And I just saw I saw every other line or some people in the post trying to justify looking that way and trying to, and I started to realize that Black people tend to make these excuses or have this entitlement that they just don't want to hear. They tune out anything that's different from what they have fixed in their mind as correct. And so that instead that, and they have this entitlement and arrogance that comes with it. And that blocks it out even further. So after a certain point, I just don't even want to respond. But, yeah, going back to that first question of traitors in the community and informers, traitors can mean even the person that I had met you originally with in regards to his YouTube entertainment show, I'll say, because it's a show, it's not a broadcast, and his donations and the fact that what has been exposed and that people are still defending that and people are still contributing money even after that, even after everything was put out there. And it just makes me shake my head, brother.
Black people have gotten so used to being the losers of the world that they don't really have a concept of what winning is. So in their minds, actions are winning. If they get up and do anything at all, they're winning. It's like the brother from Arizona said when he called in that time and I asked him, you know, what is succeeding? He said, hell, getting out of bed is a major achievement. And it's like, dude, seriously? Now, he later revealed the error of that, but that attitude, that's common for Black folk. That as far as they're concerned, if I got out of bed today, that was a major achievement. We have downgraded everything. We got roly-poly, Michelin man, jelly belly-built heifers talking about I'm thick, not I'm fat. Now, if a white woman walking with a Black man built exactly like them, they would say she's fat. But she's Black, so it's, oh, I'm not fat, I'm thick. We have defined everything down because we don't actually believe we can succeed.
Yeah. I agree with you.
We make everything too many down because we do not actually believe that we are capable of succeeding.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I listened to that footage, and I was even talking with my own mother earlier in the afternoon, and she was saying, "Well, you know, don't be so." I was saying, if that's all they did was just turn their jerseys inside out, you don't think that that's selling out? And she says, "Well, we still have yet to hear what's going on, and we shouldn't." I said, "Listen, And then when I heard what was put out there, I said, you know what, even before I heard that footage, my mind was made up to say that these guys are just field niggas. I just said it outright. That was the first thing that hit my brain. These guys only, they don't leave the plantation. They don't seem to want to see that they are owned by a master that does not respect them and never will, and hates them, but is using them for his purposes. And it was exposed, and they still, I mean, the solidarity, to me, strength would have been, you just bench yourselves, you just don't even show up to play, which says they can't, and of course the argument was they can't do that, they have contracts and they have money and what, but that would have been the ultimate show that everyone was talking about of power, and to show that would have been the ultimate sense of, all right, you know, this is the 21st century, no more of this, because they didn't, and the fact that they just bowed their heads and took it, the fact that the woman was even trying to justify it, I believe she's, I don't know if she's mixed black or Mexican. I don't know what her race is. But she was trying to justify that, or not justify, but trying to reason with him. An educated woman would have simply left. But she's bought and paid for, too. And it just makes me want to say that, you know, in some ways, should we cut out the informers and the traitors within our race? But how easy is that to do? How hard is that to do? That is the thing that I'm realizing, that there are people that are in our network, in our circles, even on these posts, even in our lives, that are dead weight, that are holding us back from where we need to be, that are standing in our way, like that YouTuber I mentioned. There are people actively profiting on standing in our way, in our race, the sellouts, the people who would sell us out, not the educated brothers who have made something for themselves, the sellouts meaning the people who would be willing to work with white supremacy to make sure that we are kept where we are. Now, how do we deal with them?
Like I said before, I would love to tell you, there is no black community per se. Dr. Claude Anderson said, we don't have a black community, we have a bunch of black, we just have black neighborhoods. There is no, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, brother, but since we walked off those plantations, we had the opportunity to make some black communities. We never did that. A community is where you perpetuate your power, wealth, and culture. There is no place in the United States is perpetuating black power, black wealth, and black culture. Nowhere. Nowhere. What does that mean? That means that you and I have been tasked with creating the black community today. Because there currently isn't one. Not in the sense that other people are enjoying it. Not in that sense. We are tasked with creating the black culture. Because there currently isn't one. There's a coon culture, but not truly a black one. It is our job to create one with everything we do and everything we say here. That's what we're doing. It is our job to create that black culture. It is our job to make that now. It is our job to create that black infrastructure, that black socioeconomic system. It's our job to do that starting from here with this small group of people that we have here. That's what we're doing.
Seems to be a very, very, it's going to be, I guess that's going to be, if anything, a very long hill, uphill battle in terms of if we're just starting today, something that should have been started from decades, centuries ago, then it would seem that from where we're sitting, from when we're just at the very beginning, like you said, this feels just like the 20th century. It feels actually like the 19th a little bit. What I'm seeing, all the reversing of our civil liberties, everything being taken away, and everything sort of just to a point now where I fear for my children. I fear for what's coming 15 years from now, 20 years from now. You know, I've only now, after listening to your broadcast, decided, okay, I'm going to just get off and just build my own business. I had a business for a time that was my own. I've decided to just take it off the shelf and build my own website storefront and market my services. I'm an IT programmer. I should be able to do that. I have all those skills.
Think about the guy with Play, Pley, Lockman. Think about how much easier it would have been for him to set up his operations if he had known had the skills you have.
Yeah.
I mean, he took $5,000, I think it was, and was asking, you know, was decided, hey, why don't I just lease these out and see what happens?
Yeah.
Why don't I lease them and we'll just see what occurs? Think of how much easier it would have been.
If the mentality of black people, the mentality, though, is that you get a job, or you, or what your parents will tell you is you get an education, you get a job, and with you, actually, you get an education, you get a good degree, you get a job, and you move forward in life, and you take what the white man gives you. You take this, you create this opportunity. But they never say, go out, get an education, get a degree, and build your own business. They never say that. So that's what was programmed into my head.
Wait a minute, but do you know why, though? Do you know why your parents and your fathers never told you to get a degree and start your own business? You know why?
Why? I know that they were...
Donald Sterling already explained it to you. Brothers, you do not need a business to get cars, clothes, and hoes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to go that far and do all that much work to get, if your goal is to get cars, clothes, and hoes. A business is not a requirement if your goal is so low and the bar is set so pathetically small that your goal is cars, clothes, and hoes. That does not require a business. That requires a few paychecks.
Yeah.
And they gave you the skill set for cars, clothes, and hoes, not the skill set for power, wealth, and influence. Or should I say, they gave you advice for cars, clothes, and hoes, not for power, wealth, and influence. And that's why they told you just get a job, because your daddy and your mama were just like, hey, you got cars, clothes, and hoes, don't you? Well, hell, what more you want?
Exactly.
Power,
it's
wealth, and influence. Man, you doing too much. You don't need all that. Can't you let them white folk take care of the power, wealth, and influence? Look, you got cars, clothes, and hoes. Ain't that everything? Life ain't nothing but hoes and money.
Well, you realize that until that paycheck gets taken from you, until you're on the unemployment line. And then you realize, wait a minute, they can take this anytime.
Nope.
But my bills are still coming.
Even if they never take it from you, you realize what a compromised position you are in when this white man can call you nigga to your face.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting up here telling people that he puts the clothes on your back and the food in your mouth, and now they are out there humiliating themselves tonight by proving that every word he said was correct. Brother, you are watching the ultimate exertion of white power. Over the last 8 months, we have watched white power exert itself not once, not twice, three times, not four times, not five times, not six times, seven times now.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. Is TBA making this up? No, I don't have to make it up. Let's go down an abbreviated list. The verdict acquitting George Zimmerman.
Yep.
Barack Obama refusing to speak on it. Eric Holder refusing to act on it. The verdict letting Michael Dunn off easy, predicted from this microphone. Striking down the Voting Rights Act. Striking down affirmative action. And now Donald Sterling. You watched that happen in 8 months. Can someone please tell me one instance of black power being exerted anywhere on this planet in the last 8 years? I'm listening to anybody who can tell me that.
And none. In fact, there's been more apologists.
I just gave you seven examples of white power exerting itself in the most brutal fashion imaginable and black men cowering.
Yep.
And this is just the last 8 months. Can you imagine what the next 8 months?
Yeah,
what
I fear
are the
for that.
Next 8 months going to bring us?
I fear for that, brother, because I look at that and I say that, you know, when I speak to my parents or I speak to people that are out there that I know in the black community, or not even the black community, just blacks in general, they're apologists and defenders of Obama. Oh, well, he's being hamstrung and he has to deal with these Republicans and this is what's going on. So they apologize for him. But how many times can you hear that apology and it doesn't work? How many times can you see what you've seen and you realize that he's just not on that same page? He never was. And I woke up to that and said, you know, if I had had to do it all over again, I would not have voted for him. If I had it to do all over again, he was the ultimate con man. They gave us him as an appeasement. He was there, and he presented everything. We're making history together. And he said all the right things. But when I look at this president for standing up for what is right, he has not done that. And black power has cowered. And black power, simple people do not come out. People do not, they march, like I said, for a day. They don't come out to do anything or to stand up for what's right, to even show integrity, even if it means that you will risk your livelihood, that you will risk, as you said, the shirt off your back, that you will risk what you have going for you. Because this culture is largely self-interest. Black people are largely interested in just acquiring things. That's all.
Well, I mean, but you think about it, though. Is he not the president that is just so appropriate and apropos for black people? He is a president who talks the talk, sang a dance, a jig, sang Al Green. Total hypocrite. Weak. Prostate bows down to the first white person. The poorest white person in the room has more influence over Barack Obama than the richest black person does. I dare anybody to prove that wrong. He will show more deference to any white person in the room, no matter how poor they are, than the richest black person standing in front of him.
I've seen that. I've seen that actually in public. I've seen him actually defer to whites more.
So is he not so appropriate for us based on our behavior? Is he not exactly like black society in general? I mean, is that not the type of president that if we hand-built him, that's what we would have? A president who reflects our values and our behavior and our pathology. We got the guy we wanted. He does exactly like us. I'll let you have the last word.
That reminds me of Be Careful What You Wish For, my brother. And I really appreciate this show. I've been actually posting it out on to anyone who listens, who's educated and is looking to move forward to listen to this show. Black First, my brother.
Black First, brother, thank you very much for joining in. Broadcast, please, broadcast. And he did tell you the right thing there. For all of you who are out there, let your family, your friends, everybody else you know, while you're passing around the Mimi Sex video link, why don't you go ahead and treat some of your friends? Don't just assume that they don't know or that they don't care. Give them the option. Let's start treating adults like adults. And if you don't think that they're interested in this like you're interested in this, then why do you have them on your friends list? I remove people and I block people and I delete people daily. Once I find out that they're not on the same wavelength with me, I remove them. I don't keep them around because I want a bunch of numbers. Damn numbers. I want a bunch of results and a bunch of progress. So let your friends know. Post this up. Repost this. Let people know that you found the haven of intelligent black thought and say, hey, man, I found some black folk who are talking about something that's on point for a damn change. No, it's not coonery and buffoonery, man. They're talking about some real stuff over here. Don't just assume that they won't get it. Don't do that. 219, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, this is Melody Lawson. I'm from Gary, but right now I'm in Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Okay, what was your name again?
Melody Lawson. I'm Paula Fields on Facebook.
Oh, well, hello, ma'am. Thank you for giving us a call. I sent you a message earlier today. I think you sent me a message and I responded to it earlier today.
Yes, you did. I told you I would be tuning in, and here I am.
Well, I do thank you. A woman of her word, that's very, very much useful out there. I think I'm just going to shackle you to our website now and just keep you here because I don't know how many motivated black women are going to show up over the next 7 days, so I'm just going to take what I can get.
Okay, I appreciate that.
And what's on your mind, sister?
Well, what's on my mind is I don't understand how in Chicago three young black men can be arrested for armed robbery and murder, how they can get together and conspire together to do crime, but it never once crossed their mind to get together and conspire to build anything. And that's the thing that really just kind of pisses me off about the black men in my community. And I'm not trying to down my brothers or anything like that, but that's what I'm seeing too much of. I'm a over-the-road truck driver. And when I say that I'm over the road, I drive all 48 states. And I get out here and I train, you know, different people. And I get different people in my truck that I talk to, mostly men, because it's still a male-dominated business. And every black male that I get in my truck, they don't want to turn this into a business opportunity where they can own their own truck and eventually their own business. This is what I talk to my brothers about every time they get in my truck. Everybody that gets in my truck can't wait to get home. They want a local job, a J-O-B. Nobody wants to own a business. And to me, it's just sad. It's sad that I'm encountering the same type of attitude over and over and over again out here from the brothers in the community. And I do talk to my brothers all the time. And it's just sad. I don't understand the mentality. You would rather get together, conspire to do a crime, but you don't want to get together and conspire to do something, to build something. I don't understand it. I really don't.
Okay. Why don't you and I discuss that here then? Now, you're an over-the-road trucker and you go coast to coast, correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So that means you get the highest number of miles, but you also get the highest pay rate, which is good.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that. Okay. Everybody, what she's referring to here, and for those of you who've never worked in transportation before, I worked in transportation. I've worked in local van transportation and some commercial transportation, but I've got a bunch of family members that deal in trucking as well. So this is something I know very much about. So let's just give a brief, make sure that everybody's on the same page with us here, okay? Because what you said is very significant. When she tells you all that they want a local, what she means is that they want to be able to make sure that they are home every day, is what she's saying. That they don't want a situation that requires them to not be able, they basically want to be able to be in the truck just like they are at a regular job for 8 hours. I get in the morning, and in the evening I can go home, 5 p.m. where I go. The problem with local is that local, the only way that you get paid a high rate for local is if you're a driver with a company with seniority, or if the local route has some type of something special, like, you know, hazardous materials. I mean, really, you would have to have, you know, your hazmat endorsement and your doubles endorsement. Basically, you'd have to be very credentialed to get paid a good amount of money for a local if all you run is local. So it would depend on the company, and it would depend on your endorsements. Endorsements means certifications, basically, for everybody out there who doesn't know. So you would have to have all of that if you're going to try to make a good amount of money locally. In other words, it ain't that easy to get. Now, regional is the next step. Regional will have you out of the state, and every once in a while, you know, you may be able to make it home the same day, but it's not really as easy. Coast to coast, you are not going to be home every day. You may not be home all week.
Mm-hmm.
But coast to coast gets the highest pay rate because they run up the most miles.
Correct.
So if you are a Negro who is chasing cars, clothes, and hoes, you're trying to figure out how can I get a local so I stay in my girlfriend's apartment. And what she is saying is, wait a minute. I don't know if you've ever seen this TV show before. Have you ever seen Ice Road Truckers?
Yes.
Okay, I'm about to say, as a truck driver, you're probably looking at that and saying, wow, really? But remember what they call it up there in Ice Road Truckers in Canada, the dash for the cash.
Exactly.
And that there's about 90 days that lake up there, and I think it's Ontario, is frozen over and they can cross it to get up to that De Beers mine or wherever they're going up there, because they've been changing places that they end up at. And they
yeah, but it wouldn't be me.
But these guys make as much money in 90 days. They actually make more money, twice as much in 90 days, as the average truck driver in the United States does for a whole year in 90 days. But here's the thing. When they get out there, they run it.
Yes.
I got fellas out there who remind me of my old days. That when I got behind the wheel, I just ran. I mean, I'm talking about these fellas in sub-freezing temperatures, and yet they got, I mean, these are fellas that you can see them on the show. They haven't slept in a day or two. Their wheels keep turning. Hugh Rowland, wheels keep turning. And I'm like, and then you wonder why they're getting the money and you're not.
Exactly.
You wonder why they are getting the cash and you're not. She's not even driving across a frozen lake with the chance of going down through the ice and dying. And she's talking about these fellows are giving her headaches about that. Now, the other thing that she's telling you all about is when she said drivers riding with her. What that means is that she trains people. Now, what they usually do is they'll sit you with somebody. Before they send you out on the road by yourself, they'll send you with a partner, basically. And until they feel like they're comfortable enough to be able to put you out there by yourself. But the next problem with that would be she gets to observe this up front and see what their attitudes are about it. They're going to truck driving school to get a car with rims on it. And she's talking about, wait a minute, you know, if we're going coast to coast, why are we not running our own thing? Now, for people who do not know, what brand of truck do you drive?
I drive a Freightliner 2013 Cascadia.
Okay. Sleeper?
Yes.
Okay, so you got the full thing on it. Satellite?
Yes. No, I don't have satellite. I have a cell phone for that.
You don't have satellite. All right. Can't win them all. But like I say, if you don't work in trucks, you don't understand. Sleeper means they got the sleep in it. Anyway, go look it up for yourself. But, okay, so she's got an Optimus Prime-looking truck is what she's got. Not the flat nose from the 1980s, y'all. I mean the one from the Michael Bay movies. She drives one of those trucks is what
yes.
she drives. Now, for those of you who don't know what kind of truck she drives, that's the kind that she drives. Not a small one and not a flat nose. She drives a big one. Now, the point of me bringing that up is that this is a black woman who's driving a big-ass truck, and yet she's got black men who want to be home today. That truck you have is a 2013, which means basically a new truck. In truck driving, a truck is not considered old until you get around 200,000, 300,000 miles.
Correct.
It's not even,
I've had
it's not
that
even
truck.
Before 100,000 miles.
I've had that truck about a year, and I've had that truck about a year, pardon me, and I've already put 150,000 miles on it.
Yeah, I was about to say, a truck in trucking is not even considered really used until you get past 75,000 miles. Is not
mm-hmm.
even really considered used. I mean, that is what they do. A brake job on a truck like that is going to run you $3,000.
Yes.
I'm about to say, now, am I just pulling these numbers out the air, Paula?
No, you know exactly what you're talking about. Exactly
okay.
what you're talking about.
The reason why
about.
I do that is because there's some fraudulent people out there who want to make people believe that they're saying stuff is true, and then you go fact check them, and you find out that even the stuff they're telling people on their phones is absolute bull jive. So that is why I go into details with my callers to let them know that, hey, you can fact check me. And if anything I'm saying is inaccurate, not factual, or false, you go and call me on it, and I let my callers call me right on it right then. So when I tell you that I've worked in these businesses, and I know what it takes, I know what it costs, I know what the residual costs are going to be, this is what it's going to cost you to get in, this is what it's going to cost you to stay in, oh yeah, and this is what it's going to cost you to get out, even if you want to get out. So I'm just solidifying my bona fides on this, but... And thank you very much for allowing me to do that. Now, a rig like the one you're driving, if that was bought new, assuming it wasn't from one of the limited auctions.
You're looking at about 160
grand. Let me just jump out there. I was about to say, is usually a truck like that is going to cost you about 150. You may be able to pick one up for 120.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Now, enters used status, which is what you are right now at 150,000 miles. Once it enters
mm-hmm.
used status, you could probably pick that truck up for 60,000, 70,000.
Correct.
Which, is a lot of money if you're buying a passenger car for yourself, but that is your business now because you are now
correct.
An owner-operator. Now, I'm
correct.
The $70,000 figure, she hesitated for a moment because she's like, man, I'm talking about the very lowest, okay? I'm not talking about, oh, yeah, they're giving out every day for that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you could, I mean, it's possible to pick up a truck like that for $60,000 or $70,000. You're probably going to be
yes.
somewhere closer to $80,000, but that $20,000 range is where you're going to be. You can
right.
pick up a truck like that for $60,000 or $70,000, maybe as much as $80,000. I myself, I wouldn't pay, even for a 2013 with 150,000 miles, I would not pay $100,000 for that truck. I'm not going to do it. Now, unless there's just a short supply of trucks out there, I'm not paying that much for a truck with 150K on it. So you can pick one up for $60,000. Now, if you are willing to go more used than that and pick up a truck that's 3 or 5 years old that's got 300,000 miles on it, you could probably pick that up $40,000. Correct
mm-hmm.
me if I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm being inaccurate or unfactual. Go ahead and correct
no.
me.
So far, you're right on point. You're exactly on point.
Okay. The good news is this means that the numbers haven't moved a whole lot since I left the business, but the bad news is I should be seeing black men all over this country with trucks, because when I go by the diesel training courses here in Shreveport, it's nothing but black men. It's nothing but black men training, and yet why are the brothers not dominating the trucking industry in the southern United States? Because I see that it's nothing but them driving the trucks in training school. What is happening between training school and a year later? That's the question. What's happening?
I'll tell you what's happening. They're getting out here, and they're believing the ads that the company runs, telling them that they're going to make $50,000 their first year, $60,000 their first year. That's not entirely true. When you first get out here, you're brand new. You don't have any experience. So you're going to, 9 times out of 10, end up with a training company. The training company is only going to pay a new person first coming through the door maybe 22 cents a mile to start out. So when you first start out, your first year, and this is what I tell all my new drivers when they get in my truck, this is your, what do you call, suffering year. You're going to suffer for that first year because you don't have experience. But if you stick with it and hang in there, you get the experience, you don't get any type of accidents under your belt, what you do is, you're going to get that experience, and then you're going to get on with a company, a larger company, and possibly do a lease purchase program. Or if you don't want to do a lease purchase program, go company with them and go at a higher rate. Save your money and purchase your own truck, and then go owner-operator, and then from there get your own authority. And this is what I try to tell a lot of the brothers getting into my truck. But when I try to go down that area, path of thought with them, I lose them because the first thing that they're thinking is, okay, what are you talking about? I'm not going to make $50,000 in my first year. What do you mean suffering? What do you mean I got to work? What do you mean I got to stay out here and run hard? They don't want to do the work. Simple as that. And that's what happens to the brothers within that first year.
Before you go any further now, before we get back to the first year, go ahead and explain to everybody right quick what you mean by get your own authority.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, when you get your own authority, you have eliminated the trucking company. You have became your own company. You own your own company, essentially. When you get your own authority, let me first tell you, when you're an owner-operator, you're running under a company's authority. So basically, you're still pretty much working for the company because you're not able to run for nobody else but them because you
right,
don't have your own authority.
I'm taking this opportunity to smarten everybody up because just because I know these things is not enough. And the reason why I'm stopping it there is because I want people to understand that what you're saying there is an important point when you say get your own trucks and then from there get your own business and your own authority. How do you register
yes.
for authority, though?
Well, when you register for your authority, you have to register through all the different states. There's a lot of paperwork
Thank
involved.
You.
But
you, Thank you.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
Basically, what she's referring to is when you all see those numbers on the side of the trucks that say DOT and whatnot, mm-hmm. once you start running your own operation, because you have to be validated with NHTSA and DOT and state DOT in every state that you're going to be in. So that's what she means by now you have to go get your authority. Once
Correct.
You start your own business, now you have to get your own authority. And it's paperwork involved, and you do have to be authorized before you can start picking up and dropping off in states. You can't be out there wildcatting. That's going to get you, because state police are going to pull you over in a minute, which is all they seem to do on the highways in Louisiana, is pull over trucks while folk are out here running over each other in Corvettes. But in any case, they're going to get a truck driver real quick, fast, easy, in a hurry. So that's why she's saying you have to do that, because if you're out there just wildcatting, you will get pulled over in a minute, and now you're in big trouble.
That is correct. And this business is a huge responsibility, and it can't be taken lightly. But once you do get your own authority, you're able to pretty much own and operate your own vehicle. You get to say when you come and go. When you're under the company's authority, they tell you when to come and go, even if you have your own truck, your own vehicle, because they're the ones giving you the load. See, a lot of people, they're under the misconception, oh, I'm a lease purchase or I'm an owner-operator, I'm doing my own thing, and that's not entirely true. You're still pretty much, how can I say, the slut of the company, because you're still running under their authority. You're not truly free unless you have your own authority. Then you can pretty much do whatever you want, make your own rules. Hey, the sky's the limit. And also, once you get your own authority, you can also hire other drivers to run under your authority and pretty much charge them a percentage for running under your authority. And pretty much after that, you can come out of your truck and not ever have to drive again, because that percentage is going to pay you, you know, for the duration of however long you're out there running. So I try to, you know, I'm sorry.
Now, let's get into some literals here, okay? And like I said, there's a reason why I'm letting you answer all these questions, because I've been explaining this to people over and over again. They can go back to my broadcast and see where I've gone over all this information before. Because when I know something about a business, I try to smarten everybody up. It's been half a decade. Nobody's called me to tell me that they acted on any of it yet, except for a few people. But I keep trying to do this. And maybe if they hear it from a woman, because black men tend to bow down and kiss the ass and what would black women say. So maybe if you say it, it'll carry some weight with them. Maybe if something with ovaries tells them to do this, maybe that'll carry weight with them, because they don't respect a black man when he says it. So maybe if a black woman who sounds like their mama says it to them, maybe that'll carry a little more weight with them. I know you're saying to yourself, well, hell, they sit right beside me in the truck and it doesn't work, but maybe it'll work with this crowd. I don't know. So I'm going to take a shot for it, because if I say it, it carries no weight with them. How much down would you have to pay to get your own truck new versus your own truck used?
How much down? You'd have to have at least $5,000. And that's if you have good credit. That's with good credit.
Okay.
Hello?
Now, $5,000 is not a lot of money, by the way. $5,000 is not a lot of money. If you've been handling, $5,000 is a lot of money?
No.
I'm going to say maybe the trucking business isn't as good as I thought it was anymore, because $5,000 is not much money at all. Negroes are out here spending that on rims.
Not at all. You could save that up within a few weeks.
I'm seeing it roll up and down Burke Coons in Shreveport. They're spending that on rims. So $5,000.
That amount can be saved up within a few weeks.
Yes, I'm about to say, if you are out there handling your business and driving your truck like you're supposed to, you'll have that, at worst, you'll have that money in 6 months. Why do you not have enough money to get your own truck in 6 months? There's really no excuse. The only excuse is if you stop and buy this whole house and that whole house over there because you got paid some money and figure, well, hell, I might as well just ball the hell out. Because all the other black males ain't doing nothing. I've actually got a little change to spend, and it doesn't take that much money to get black men's attention. So, hell, I got paid. Let me just ball the hell out. And that's exactly what they do. They leave their down payment money at Bushika and Chandelica's.
That's what they're
doing. That's where our investment capital goes. And you drive a truck for a while, first thing they do is go off and go buy a brand new pickup truck or some Cadillac or something. And I know because I see it. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what I see. I know they do it. I watch them do it. They're Gwent your investment money right there, that brand new Chevy Silverado, that brand new F50. That was where your investment money went. I have yet to meet a truck driver that I know who does not own at least 3 cars. I have yet to meet a black male truck driver that I know of who does not own at least 3 vehicles. I'm being totally honest with you right now. Not 1, not 2, 3. I think I can maybe think of 1 guy. Well, yeah, he did wreck his other car, so he's got 2 now. So I do know 1 who does not have 3 anymore. Used to have 3. He doesn't have them anymore. But he's got 2 of them. There went your investment money. He could have sold one of them damn vehicles and bought his own.
Yes.
He came back to me talking about he didn't want to have to pay for the expense. Actually, all of them say the same thing. They don't want to pay. It's an expense and it's a headache. So for white men and Latinos, the Latinos run the yard in California. In the trucking business, run the yard. You tell me I'm lying about that, Paula. They run the yard in California and Arizona. The Latinos run the yard in the trucking business.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, on the West Coast, period, New Mexico, Arizona, I would say like the lower half of Texas near Houston and Laredo, the Latinos have that all sewn up. They not only have businesses in the trucking industry, but they have banks. They have every kind of business imaginable over there. And
oh,
if you try
to
talk,
there now. They've got banks. They've got repair shops.
Yes.
They got repair shops. So the Latino trucking company can go take his truck to a Latino mechanic to get his truck fixed on. Things like that.
And they do business with each other. They give each other business. So it's just an ongoing circle of money just staying within their community. And that's how they've managed to take over these states. I mean, they've just literally taken over California. And when
they are 39% of the population of California right now. Latinos are 39% of the population. Black people are 7% of the population of California. Asians are 9%. Asians now outnumber black people in the state of California. You would think that black men would understand that they are staring down death's door and that they would be more serious and more disciplined than they have ever been in their lives. You would think that and you would be completely wrong.
I don't think that it has anything to do with that. I think that it's just that they're not aware. They don't really care, to be honest with you. I mean, they were pretty much pushed out of Los Angeles. I mean, when the Latinos came over there, I mean, they came over there with a plan. They got together. They saved their money. They spent their money with each other. They built up businesses together. And black people, you know, we just wanted a job. That's all we ever want is a job. So we go and we get hired somewhere, and then they go and get hired at the same place. And then they turn around and they're backstabbing you and they're telling on you and they get you fired. And then they go and they say, hey, you know, I know somebody that can do a better job than that person. And then they go and they get their friend in or their family member. And that's how they got ran out. I'm just going to be honest with you. That's exactly how it happens. And even when I drive down through Laredo or through Houston, Texas, you go across that border patrol, who's patrolling the border? Hispanic. Nobody knows that. I got Pablo and Jose asking me if I'm an American citizen. And I don't care, you know, how that sounds, but that's just the reality.
Now, most people do not know that the Border Patrol of the United States is mostly Latino because they want people who are bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
So, automatically, you got the foxes guarding the hen house. Isn't that amazing? Or should I say
exactly.
The roosters guarding the hen house more to the point. Not really the fox, the roosters are guarding the hen house. Now, what you said there about they don't know, now that contradicts the reality, though, because they do know. There's not a black male in Los Angeles who did not. Hell, how do you think Tom Bradley got elected? Black people understood the situation that they were in. What happened is that black people have been waiting. Black people have been lazy. Black people have not had an agenda. Black people have not had a purpose for being. And we thought that Tom Bradley was going to take care of our purpose for being. And Tom Bradley did what his Democratic masters told him to do. Because black people brought nothing to the table. Black men have always understood what the problem was in Los Angeles, in Watts, in Compton, in Oakland, in San Francisco, in San Diego. We have always known what the problem was. We have always known what we needed to do. The Black Panthers are your proof of that. The problem that we've had is that only a few black men have ever gotten, black men, I'm saying because men, because we're supposed to be the leaders, only a few black men have actually gotten up and done anything. Everybody else has been sitting. Trying to figure out, I mean, Los Angeles, you know, that Los Angeles, Oakland area, we went from the Black Panthers to Too Short and MC Hammer.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what you transitioned to. Long Beach. That was what happened to us. The Latinos didn't come across that border chasing cars, clothes, and hoes. They came across that border to build an economy.
Yes.
And they've done it. I mean, let me make this very, very clear to everybody out there right now. Latinos are the largest ethnic group in California. They are also the primary movers and growers of economy in California. They came across the border for the purposes of building a Latino economy. And I want to formally declare on the BlackChannel.net radio tonight the status of the Latino economy. The mission for building a Latino economy in California is officially mission accomplished.
Yes, pretty
they
much.
They are not on their way to building a Latino economy. They have successfully completed building it in California, and now they're just branching out. They're just taking the gospel. They are taking the gospel of Latino economic power from state to state now. That's all they're doing. They've finished the job in California. It's on to Arizona, on to Colorado, on to New Mexico, on to Nevada, on to Texas. And they've already got a foothold in all those states. They are just now going to replicate the formula in all those states. That's all they're going to do now. And the western half of the southwestern half of the United States, that's a wrap. They got that. And first order of business is run these niggas out because they're not producing anything. You let us have it, and we will produce. And you, since white folk, since you don't have the social clout and the credibility to drive them out, you let us do it. We will do it. And by the way, they will sing a song and dance. We do it. They're so desperate to get J-Lo into bed. They're so desperate to get J-Lo into bed that they will actually bring her in. We don't even have to fight for it. They will bring her in.
Jason, do you think that the Latinos were interested in integrating with whites when they came here?
No, but that then again, they never had to. And that's the point that we as black people do not get and do not understand. We do not understand Latino culture. I've spoken on this for years since my first broadcast. What is the Latino culture? Well, go ahead and take a look at Mexico. Where did that come from? It came from the same place that the Caucasians came from. They are all European cultures. The only significant difference is that one speaks Spanish and the other speaks English.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the only significant difference. They all come from Europe. They all have the same religion. Did y'all get that now? They have the same religion. When you trace their heritage back across the ocean, It comes from the same place that the Brits and the Germans, their heritages all come back to Europe. And what I'm saying is that we as black people have refused to acknowledge that fact. that there is far less distance between Latinos and Caucasians than there are is between Latinos and black people. And black folk have just been so desperate to make black. They have been, we have been so desperate because that's the quickest path to getting in some draws. Just convince her that she's black. And they're looking at you as a stepping stone. Their goal has never been to integrate. They don't have to. Their goal has been to build power. And power integrates on its own. Because they realize that they got power and there is more power to be gotten by merging with white people. That's the point that Negroes have refused to accept and acknowledge because we like being losers and like being weak. Those people understand there is power to be gained by merging with white people. And that's why when Jennifer Lopez dropped P. Diddy, who did she take up with?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, follow the line. She dropped Negroes and went straight where? And then ultimately ended up where?
Yes, she went white.
You start to connect the dots now.
Yeah, I'm connecting the dots.
And she is not atypical. You see this kind of thing every single day. Look at Eva Longoria. Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't supposed to remind you all of that, was I? I wasn't supposed to remind you of that. I was supposed to let y'all forget about that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't let you forget. I was supposed to let you forget. Oh, well. We have refused to accept that because we're looking for a way to get some draws. We're not, and we call, black men call that power. These people do not have to integrate with white people. They've built an independent economy, and what they are doing is they're looking at white folk and saying, hey, you know, there's more similarities between us than there are differences. And all Latinos have to do is give up their Spanish language, and the white folk have thrown the doors open to them. You have never seen a Latino who was not fully welcomed as long as he gave up his language. Or at least as long as he was not only able to speak Spanish. This is what they did with the Hungarians. This is what they did with the Italians. This is what they did with the Spanish. This is what they did with the Asians. This is what they did with the Germans. We can go down the list. Every group of people who have been assimilated, the only real requirement that they ever had for you was that you give up the language. You can keep everything else. Give up your language. You look close enough to us that we can genetically assimilate you. Just give up that language. It's happened in the same order every time. But we don't watch our history. We don't remember our history as black people, so we are doomed to lose. Because we don't actually know the history of America. We don't actually know the history of these other groups. Jessica Alba's people before her didn't speak Spanish. I mean, didn't speak English. Jessica Alba is bilingual. And Jessica Alba, after that faux pas that she had saying she wasn't Latino, she did a 180 immediately to let people know, oh, I am Latino. Her people checked her. Her people checked her in a heartbeat when she said that mess. Went out and went on a video tour. And then several times said that she teaches her children to be bilingual. That her children know how to speak Spanish and English. Congratulations on that, but her grandchildren will not be speaking Spanish. They can't. The money is with the English-speaking people. And because you've knuckled under the Italians and knuckled under the Germans and knuckled under, well, you get the idea. Because you knuckled under all these other people and got them to speaking English, guess what? English is the currency now. So guess what? The pressure is coming on you from all sides. What good is Spanish when you are in an English-speaking country? You're just doubling your workload. Why don't you simplify and just speak English? You ain't missing nothing. And if you don't believe me, go listen to Carlos Mencia. He's got a great routine that he did about talking about, I ain't left nothing in Mexico. Oh, yeah, y'all forgot about that. Y'all forgot, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to be dropping facts like this. I'm sorry, Paula, because this is what makes Negroes realize how stupid they were to talk about black and brown coalitions because they never connected the dots before. Okay, sorry, I wasn't supposed to sit up here and expose stupidity and intellectual laziness. I wasn't supposed to tell them that. Carlos Mencia has a routine that's damn near a decade old now where he said that. Sounded like some Negroes, you know? I ain't left nothing in Africa. He said it. He said, the only thing good about Mexico is, he said, you want to know how, he said, I know exactly what's going on in Mexico. That's why we left. Go look the routine up for yourselves. It's on YouTube. I'm not even going to give that to y'all. Go look it up yourselves. And go see if you can prove me wrong. And say I was just making it up. Go prove me wrong then. No, that's the reason why nobody can do a video about me, because they can try it. It blows up in their faces every time they want to try it, but okay. The routine is there. You can go listen to him talk about it. He hasn't left nothing in Mexico. And, oh yeah, one more thing. He's not the only prominent Mexican comedian who has said that. By the way, he's not the only one. I'm telling you that even if they don't understand what the end game is, white folk do. But here's the real thing. The real thing is black people should be asking themselves, but what are the ramifications of this for us? What you ultimately end up with is white supremacy and people who are white supremacist sympathetic. That's what you end up with. George Zimmerman was not a white man, but he was a white supremacist. Clarence Thomas is not a white man, but he is a white supremacist. Starting to get it now?
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense.
These people on the same page. Because as soon as you assimilate into white folks' culture, guess what? They start buying your Latino businesses. And once they buy your historic Latino businesses, what are you going to do? You're going to keep shopping there and buying there. Mm-hmm. Only now it's white people who own it. White people are willing to wait 10, 15, 20, 30 years to make their mark. They're willing to do that. Other groups of people are not willing to do that. They are. We are playing checkers. They are playing cosmic chess. Not just chess, cosmic chess. Hell, that damn three-level chessboard you all see. That's what they're playing. And we don't get it. What I'm telling you is that ultimately you are going to end up with the same situation where white people are the numerical minority and Negroes are so dumb that all we do is take a look at, oh, look at white folks' numbers. You are not tracking the power, wealth, and influence. Black men will sit up here and tell you that power, wealth, and influence don't mean nothing. And I just explained to you how it does. And black men will sit up here because they're so cowardly and so petrified and so scared, they refuse to talk about power, wealth, and influence, even though ultimately power, wealth, and influence is what runs the game. And these other people are going to bow to their power, wealth, and influence. That's the way it always happens. Why? Because these other people want more. And the only way to get it is to bow. The black males in the NBA are bowing and walking away with no power, no wealth, and no influence.
Wow. Let me ask you something. You know, we fought really hard during the time of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, especially with Martin Luther King for desegregation. Do you think that we were actually better off when we were segregated?
Take a look at the numbers. Segregation only had one upside for black people. It forced us to build our own independent economy. It forced us to, because those people would not let us be part of theirs. The problem is that black people suffer from, as Umar Johnson has called it, post-traumatic slave disorder. Post-traumatic slavery disorder. We want white supremacy has infantilized us. As Dr. Francis Cress Welsing has stated so brilliantly, it's infantilized us. It makes you a child to white people. And we've spent now 12 generations trying to get white people to like us. We want them to like us so much. We want them to like us so badly that that's worth more than money to us, and they know it. The truth is that those black males are not standing up to Donald Sterling because Donald Sterling is a father figure to them. What? I'll say that again. They are not standing up to Donald Sterling because Donald Sterling is a father figure to them. Sometimes father figures are kind and loving, and other times they are cruel and despotic, but that does not remove the fact that they are a father figure. And he explained to you what makes him a father figure. I put food on their mouths and clothes on their back and cars under their asses. How many parents have told that to their children? Prove me wrong. That is what all these white coaches do with these universities and these football teams. They know that all these bastard boys see them as father figures. And once he injects himself and locks on as your father figure, that he demands that you give base allegiance to him as the father figure, he's got you. He's got you. He's got you. And Donald Sterling understands that he is a father figure. And having that half-black girlfriend, that made them say what to themselves, Paula? I'll let you answer that one. When he got the half-black girlfriend, even after all the stuff they've heard about him all this time, what did that make his players think when he did that?
That he was just like them. That he was on their team. That he was
How can he possibly be racist?
Yeah.
How could he have meant all that other racist stuff he was saying before like that? Look at his girlfriend, man. And he don't just want a girlfriend. He wants a black and Mexican one. He gave up his white wife so he can get a black Mexican mistress. He's got to be on our team. Gotta be. Tell that damn black authority, shut the hell up. Nick, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what the hell is going on. It's the 21st century. You don't know nothing. I seen proof. I seen it with my own two beady little buck-faced eyes. I seen it. What you saying don't mean nothing. That's what they told me. They've been telling me that for years, that what I'm saying doesn't mean anything, Paula. They're saying that what these guys are doing is, when I reminded them about Strom Thurmond, Thomas Jefferson, we can go down the list. They've been doing this forever. But they are so desperate to get that pat on the head from daddy that they will kill you and me to get it, Paula. And that's what you meant by their spook to sell us out. They are so desperate to get a white person to pat them on the head that they will kill you and me for it. They will kill us for it. And that's why I told the first caller, we need to rethink what it means to be black and black community and what black means. We need to totally redefine that. Why? Because it has never actually had a real definition, and it's time for us to get one. I have to tell you all that I watched my viewer count here drop off when I told everybody that Donald Sterling was a father figure to them. I have to tell you, I watched my viewer count drop off. Dropped off by about 20 viewers when I said that. They don't want to hear this truth because that just punched them in the gut, Paula. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear somebody calling it for what it is. They are afraid, and he just sat here and pimp-slapped all of them. And everybody who watched those games, he is steady pimp-slapping you too. But they don't want to hear that. They do not want to hear that, sister. They don't want to hear that at all. And that is why you are a black female. And I can't sit up here and get mad at you if you say that you if you start questioning your respect for black men. What have they given you to respect? What have they given you? As a woman, you will know your place and you will keep it. But you're not going to do it if nobody's got your back on nothing. That's suicide. That's stupid. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Black males are so sissified, and I'm talking about even the ones who were not raised in single mother homes. The two-parent homes are doing this. The black single father homes are doing this, by the way. It's not just the bastard baby-making homes. The bastard baby-makers are the worst incubators of this behavior, but the two-parent and the single-parent homes are not doing enough to stop this. They're not doing enough.
No, they're not.
That's the real point.
And the sad reality of that is, you know, when you look at who's raising these kids out here, I was just watching a video earlier today. It was posted on FoxNews.com, and this young lady was out fighting in the neighborhood with another young lady, and I saw grown-ups, adults, stopping other adults who were trying to stop the fight. I mean, threatening them, beating them. You know, it was going to be several fights breaking out because some of the adults wanted to break up the fight, but there were other adults stopping these adults from breaking up that fight. And I'm thinking to myself, what kind of trashy community do we live in where you have adults that condone that type of action? It's just sad. And this is why we're dying.
That's why you and I have to make the decision. Who is going to be a part of black society? Who is going to be in the black community? We make that decision now. Because those people, they're not part of it. They're the savages. And it starts by us coalescing our own power, wealth, and influence. It starts here with you and me and us and we. It is humble beginnings, but it starts here, sister. It starts here. I wish that our forebears had done it, but they were too cowardly and lazy, so it falls to us. That's the bad news. The good news is, aren't we the same folk who built those pyramids over there that nobody can still figure out how we did it? Yeah, that's us too. Let's show them that, hell, the pyramids are going to look minor compared to what we're about to pull off. Last time we built pyramids, we are going to be the first group of people in history to rebuild an entire society. We built the first one, and now we're going to show you it wasn't a fluke. We're going to do it again. I'll let you have the last word, sister.
After that, there's nothing to be said. Black first, brother.
Black first, sister. Thank you very much for joining us here tonight. Let's grab caller from 682. You're on live with the Black Channel.
How you doing, Mr. Black?
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Kerwin. I'm calling from Arlington, Texas.
And what's on your mind, brother?
I was just listening to the broadcast. You were making some very good points. First off, about truck drivers. I actually have a friend back from my hometown in Mississippi, and he definitely have a pickup truck, and I think two. And regarding starting your own business, I'm in the insurance business, and I always tell, you know, friends and family, like, it's a great business to start. I've been doing it for, like, 4 years now, and I notice how good of income that the owners of the insurance agencies are making, and I always try to spread the word that to other people that, you know, I feel like may have a little money saved, but that it's a very good investment. But as usual, it falls on deaf ears, and no one, everybody just still satisfied with going to work and working for somebody else.
And that's the way it always is. We consider it to be safe to be beneath people's boots. That's
exactly. And you probably know also, and like we've been in the insurance business for 4 years. I luckily came across an agency owner that will let me work till the stuff that I sell will be residual income for me once I go independent. So I just, even though it's vice versa, it's a white person agency, but they was able to give me that opportunity to let me keep the stuff that I sell be residual income for me once I go independent, which will be very soon. And like I said, it's amazing how easy it is. Like, a lot of people want to start franchises like McDonald's and Subway, but you got your State Farm Nationwide and Allstate that the probably is an easier franchise to get on your own than, you know, fast food restaurants.
Okay, well, now that's let's talk specifics.
Okay.
Exactly what would you need to do that? And cost-wise also, just so we can have an example. We just talked about the trucks, what it costs to get your own trucking company going. Okay, give us some specifics.
Well, I work for a Nationwide agency. Let me speak on Nationwide. Nationwide, if you don't have the capital to come out the gate to buy, let's say, for easy math, $500,000 in premium renewal a year, they have programs where if you have $10,000 in your bank account and have, you know, good, no felonies and good credit, you can go through a 24-month program to get your own.
Okay, wait. Define good credit.
I would say 650 and above. That's my opinion of good credit.
Okay, now is that your opinion or is that their opinion? Because they'd be the ones we'd be dealing with. So what is their opinion of good credit?
To be honest with you, I do not know. But in my opinion, I would think 650 and above would be good. But
now, isn't that very interesting? None of these companies that we deal with, they never tell us exactly what the score is to consider good credit. Isn't that very interesting? They tell you that you turned down because your credit's not good enough, but they never actually define what is, quote, good credit.
And I never thought about that till now.
Yeah, I can tell you any number of companies, car dealerships, whatever. When you're black and walk in the door, they never tell you what good credit is. You're just not approved because of your credit, but nobody ever tells you what good credit is so that you can come back when your credit is up to what they want. They never define that for you, and there's a reason for that. And now once you think that over, you'll be like, yeah, there's a reason for that. But please, go ahead and continue.
Wow, you just dropped the bomb on me. Like, it kind of threw me for a loop. But like I was saying, like, they definitely have programs like the 24-month program where you have to reach certain goals, of course, with selling auto, home, and life insurance. And after that program, you will be able to get your own agency, and they'll give you, like, a $90,000 bonus to go towards you starting your own agency also. So these insurance companies, they have all type of programs to get people in because actually they want more agencies to be started out there. But only people I see taking advantage of is white and, like you were just previous talking about, is Hispanics. And also you was, not to jump point to point, but you was talking about how the Hispanics in California is taking over. I'm out here in Texas and they have their own grocery store. I mean, not small grocery store. I'm talking about huge grocery chains out here. And they everywhere, and they, from those grocery stores, they set them up in their own community, and they are doing amazing things, and they own construction companies, and they just got a lot going on out here. And I can see, like, Texas is pretty much, it's a mission accomplished out here also.
And where are we at? Where are we at? You're in Arlington, Texas. Dallas, Fort Worth. That's my old stuff. DeSoto, Addison, Plano, Richardson, Mesquite. Oh, yeah. I'm not making it up. We go down the list if you want to.
Exactly.
I can tell you some stories about the LBJ in 635. I can tell you some stories. But if you don't live in Dallas, you don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, but my real point is, where's our representation and all that?
We don't. We don't have any type of representation anywhere. I'm from Mississippi, and I definitely don't see it there, and even out here, it's none at all. And then when you try to, you know, get together with other brothers and sisters, they don't want to do anything either. They just happy with having a job. Even they may have capital, you know, just dwindling away in the savings account. They still want to just be happy with having a job, taking vacations, and wait for retirement to come and not owning anything to pass on to the next generation.
Retirement. Now, can you define for everybody what retirement is?
Retirement. I would say retirement is basically having something like you reach a certain age, you can't work anymore, you have what you call a nest egg to live on till you're dead. Or money.
What you mean is that retirement is what you do as you are awaiting your turn to die.
Exactly.
And that is what Negroes spend their whole lives doing. We try to retire as quickly as possible. Those folk you're talking about are just simply waiting for their turn to die. And don't even have a nest egg to sit on while they die.
And most of the time, they really don't think about, well, once you do retire, you're not making that. If you don't have enough to support the living you used to, you really is a bad situation. It's a bad situation. And it's crazy. And then I'd be trying to, like, I'm like, okay, I have people that I say, hey, get into this insurance business. It may not be a lot of money in the beginning, because you do need to learn how to sell and learn the products and all of that. That only takes a year or two. But once you get through that I call the struggling part, the learning curve, I mean, it's a great business to get into. But people is...
Well, how many companies out there, let's just speak honestly, though, how many companies out there actually offer the kind of opportunity that you got?
not many.
Okay, because here I have to specialize.
Exactly, and not many is being kindly. I can't even think of anybody that got the opportunity. Other program I'm in, except maybe two other people, and he's Asian in Houston.
Because I don't mind looking at things. I don't mind people looking into doing things. I just want to make sure that they have practical information, because there's nothing worse than deciding you're going to do something and then running into surprises.
Exactly. And then that's why I say the best route is to go looking into starting your own agency, because, like, the opportunity I got, it probably won't be offered to – it'll be hard to be offered, because a lot of these agency owners don't want to give up their piece of the pie of their – renewal income from renewal premiums on auto and home insurance. So the best route is to start your own agency.
Right, but that would be a lot more expensive.
Exactly. It would, but it's defining your definition as, it will be expensive, but I see people spend money on dumb crap all the time that they can use to start a business.
Let's make sure you and I have a common frame of reference here, because she's about to start.
Okay. No, sorry about that.
Define expensive as far as how much you would need to spend to start your own agency.
$1,000 can definitely get you in the game.
Okay, because my figures were a little bit different from that, because what I was looking at before is usually it takes somewhere around $250,000. But the reason why I say that is because most businesses fail within 3 to 5 years. Getting started is not usually what destroys businesses. Being undercapitalized and being unable to stay in business long enough to become viable is usually what runs them into the ground and does them in, because it's very easy to get started into something and not be able to afford to keep doing it. So would you be, I mean, I don't think you'd be able to keep yourself afloat for a very long time if all you had was 50,000. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You correct, and what I was saying is for 50,000, I was looking at that as the minimum to get a small book of business. Like I would say, 50,000 can at least get you a $500,000 book of business on renewal
okay.
and commission.
Well, that's what I wanted to make sure of there. I mean, starting with the bare minimum, that is important. Don't get me wrong. And I do want people to have that because that is easiest for them. But
I'm sorry about that, but yeah, bare minimum.
What you're saying is setting up just a small place. You know, with a minimal line of insurance for it, which is perfectly fine. I don't have a problem with that. I believe people should start small in business. I mean, hell, if you were good enough to run Geico, you'd be running it already, but you're not. So you need to learn what the hell you're doing. Start small, because emotion and enthusiasm are limitless. What you are actually capable of doing is usually very limited at the beginning. So I don't have a problem with that. But I mean, with that being the case, though, even with that, okay, let me just go ahead and let you finish your thought on that then so you can just fully explain exactly what it is before I jump in again. Go ahead and I just want to make sure you fully explain yourself first. I'm not jumping on you. I'm not trying to catch you in a gotcha. I just want people to actually understand what it is, and if I hear anything that I have questions about, I'll let you know.
No, and I pretty much finished making it. I'm just piggybacking on the point where you was talking about. We're just afraid to branch out from the JOB, to start our own business, having our own authority and power. Because, like you said, our definition of having power and control is having a job and working for someone, and being afraid to make mistakes on our own and doing different things that we have good trades in or have a talent in, but we want to take it in and get employed and work for someone else. And I was just going off of that. But a lot of times I see a lot of people, they join, and I sent you a message on Facebook about this question also about why it tend that we would take that risk on joining multi-level marketing companies instead of starting business of our own, but we'll quit to join different multi-level marketing companies and do that and spend money on that. But I would definitely...
Well, the reason for that, though, the reason why multi-level marketing is so popular with black people is because those people are very, very aggressive about getting in our faces. That's really the first time that most black people have some white person who's really, really smiling and very, very happy to see them.
Wow, okay.
And that's usually what happens to them. So that black people can wrap their heads around. As I spoke on last night, I had a young man who called me a few weeks ago, and I asked him, can you see a world of black empowerment where you've got black doctors and black lawyers and black engineers and all the people who provide the essential services that you need are black? And his answer was flat out, no, I can't see that. I don't see a world where we would be able to accomplish that. So you have to understand, we are dealing with a whole bunch of people amongst us, a sizable majority amongst us, who does not even understand what the concept of black is and are totally devoid of the concept of black empowerment, totally lost.
And Mr. Black, and to that point, I think the issue with having all of those things is communication. How can we communicate or find those type of people, or the black lawyers, or different black people that have different black business and about black empowerment? It's just hard to find those different people, especially within your own area, and just networking and getting to those people. It's just hard.
Well, let me ask you something here. I mean, because my question is, do most black people want wealth? Because I can hook up with three other black men who've got power, wealth, and influence, and we'll run whatever city you put us in. How many black men are actually trying to do that? Take a look at the guy in the story that I was relating to you all here before, Mr. Lockman, who owns that play company. I mean, you take a look at what he has done in one calendar year. He is making millions in one calendar year. Same thing for Suja Juice. In one calendar year, they were in the black. A white male, a young white male, and a young white female. I don't know if they've ever had sex with each other. I do know that they do have enough money now that they can have sex with anybody they pretty much want to. And it ain't going to hurt them. And they have a business in place that will fund whatever sexcapades they want to go on. Black folk don't think that way. Brother, how much would it cost for a black man to hold off on his rims? Reading this story that this guy just did right here, how much money would that cost you to try that on your own? I mean, because is Netflix the only online business that rents movies?
Surely not.
I mean, nope. Technically speaking now, as far as mailing them out, I don't think they are the only one out there, though, that actually mails out DVDs. But in the case of Netflix, they really want to switch to streaming anyway. Dealing with
really
that physical media is, well, dealing with the physical media is more of a hassle. It's more expensive because you have to have people actually handle it. It would be much cheaper for them to just have a streaming business in place. They could just take care of all of that from three remote locations. And instead of having hundreds of employees, they would only need, what, 50?
Exactly.
Just to keep the computers going. That's all they would need. So in their line of business, it would be most advantageous for them to dump the DVDs and just go strictly to streaming. They've been trying to do that, but the movie houses have made that very hard. So until the movie houses make it easier, and now the internet companies are squeezing from the streaming side, this guy has a business model that is not vulnerable on either the physical side or the internet side. In reality, his company technically more profitable than Netflix is. Not just technically, it's literally more profitable than Netflix is. He's got fewer Lego sets, but he's making millions. How much would it cost for you or me to just duplicate that and lease them for less than he does? He started in his garage. Why can't we do the same thing? And why do we have to be limited to Lego sets? What about video games? Does Netflix, somebody tell me, does Netflix give video games? Or is it just movies?
I don't think it's
video games either. That's why I'm asking, do they do that? Because everybody wants to holler and whine about GameStop. And we all know about the DVDs. I mean, take a look at Redbox, by the way. Just in case you thought that Netflix was all you could have, take a look at Redbox. What did Redbox do? Now, for those of you who don't know, if you've gone to the grocery store and you've seen those Coinstar machines, that's the same company that does Redbox. First, they started with those coin machines that take your pennies and roll them for you and give you dollar bills if you want. And then they branched off into machines that do DVDs.
And 5 years ago, I thought that was just something that you can...
I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world, by the way. I did. When I heard... Because I was offered 8 or 9 years ago, I was offered to invest in a Redbox. When they were first starting up the Redbox thing, I was offered that. I said no.
Wow.
As I was losing my previous business, by the way. I said no. I looked at it, and I will be honest with you, Black Authority, I didn't get it. First of all, it would have been a terrible business for me because I don't actually watch movies like that, so I'm not a movie person. I don't like movies. I actually dislike them. It takes a lot to get me to watch one. So for that reason, I was like, I'd be terrible at this because I don't even like movies. But I will tell you, I was offered it, and I said no. When they were first giving out the things to offer to people to do Redbox, I talked to some people, and they talked to me, and I said no. I didn't get it. I mean, I understood what it was, but I was one of the people who said, this is very risky. What if people don't return the videos? What are you going to do then? Now, understand, this was before Netflix hit big, too, by the way. And I was like, what if they don't return them, then what? This isn't like a Coke machine. You want us to leave these machines where? Outside of Walgreens?
Yep.
They don't have the Coke machines outside anymore, but I'm supposed to leave this outside? No. Let somebody else try this one. Well.
And then the smart part about it, they know people will forget to take it back the day after, and they make more money, and people keep them for 4 or 5 days, and then, like, the people that don't return, they just take that $25 or $30 off your card.
And, like I say, I mean, now, for everybody who's out there now, I mean, there's no money to be made in Redbox now, not like that, because they've made so much they don't need you to franchise anymore like that. But I'm saying back when the money was on the ground floor, like I say, that's when you want to get in as the ground floor. You don't want to come in anything years later. The profits are going to be a lot lower. But, I mean, like I say, I mean, I will freely admit to you, because I don't know much about movies, and I had a lot of questions about it. But Redbox didn't, and Netflix didn't. And obviously there's enough customer demand out there to be able to sustain both of them, because the Redboxes, in case you all didn't know, are very profitable. Those Redbox machines are very profitable, very much so. For anybody who didn't know, they're very profitable. When McDonald's sets up a McDonald's franchise, within 6 months, what's going to be across the street from them? Either a Burger King or a Wendy's. Or a Subway. This guy has shown that his business model will work. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Go take a look at his website, see what he's doing right, and go see what he's doing wrong. And he's already told you that he wants to branch out into other things. He's already told you that he wants to branch out into other things. What are you waiting for? What are we waiting for, brother? What are we waiting for? What we are waiting for is a white person to come and tell us to do it.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, and a white person to give us the money, give us a salary to start our own business. In other words, they're waiting for an opportunity like yours. And you've already told them that, man, this don't happen all the time. We're waiting
really
for somebody to give us a guarantee, and the only thing that's guaranteed is poverty and death. Those are the only two things I guarantee you can get if you want it. I guarantee you can be poor and die if that's what you want. For everything else, there's risk involved.
And we're not afraid we're so afraid to take the risk, or afraid of what our friends and family may say, and just afraid of falling on our face. That fear would just keep us in the situation we are in now.
The most advantageous step that any black person can take is to stop listening to your family and your friends tell you why you can't. That doesn't mean be stupid, and that doesn't mean pour money into everything that moves. You need to investigate things thoroughly. That guy investigated things, and he started small. He started with the Lego sets that he already owned. He talked to women about how much would you pay a month to lease this. How much would you pay? He got the right information and then said, all right, let's give it a spin. He started out of his garage. If things work, great. If they don't work, I gave it a shot. And we move on to the next thing. But guess what? It didn't fail. It did work. And now, everybody else is going to be playing catch up. What is stopping us? All these black men love playing Xbox games. Nobody has tried to become the Netflix of video games. Ain't that amazing? Isn't that absolutely amazing? black men love playing the games, but we believe that only white people or non-black people can own them. And that's why those 20 or 30 men, I call them men advisedly, playing for the Clippers are boys and not men. And Donald Sterling just pimp-slapped all of them in front of the world. But the question isn't what will they do about it, because they're going to do nothing. The question is, what will you and I do about it?
And I was just totally embarrassed about that whole situation. I mean, like, how they just came back and played, like, all because of a trophy over something that, and then Doc Rivers leading the way, talking about the best way to show is to play and go for the championship. I'm like, white folks just play us and make us look bad on the public stage so many times. It's a bad look in my opinion.
Could you imagine the situation where a man cheated on his girlfriend? And her mother told her, you know what? What he did to you was wrong, horrible, and inexcusable. And he needs to be punished. Let me tell you the best way to punish him. The best way to punish him is to cook him 2 meals a day. And to iron all of his clothes and his brother's clothes. And to give him oral sex and any other type of sex he wants. And if he wants threesomes with you and the woman he's cheating with, you should do that too. The best way to punish your husband for cheating is to work harder at being a better wife. Could you imagine any woman telling her daughter that?
Of course not.
And yet Doc Rivers just told all these young black men that the best way to punish Donald Sterling is to get out there and play even harder than you ever have.
And make more money for him.
Let's hear it for the house Negro who's done come down and all the field Negroes are dancing their jig.
Yeah, the coon train gets on time.
As Corey Holcomb said, this is a cold-ass game. Man, this is a cold-ass game. But they don't want to hear that because black males get embarrassed and humiliated when I say these kind of things. Well, they just need to be because it's the truth. It's what you're doing.
I mean, it's so easy. It's so obvious to see that. And it's hard to believe that they can't see that for themselves. Plain sight.
They can see it. Just like I told Paula, they can see it. They can see it. There's nobody in black society on earth who does not see it. They are scared, brother. Every single one of those black males on the Clippers team, including Doc Rivers, are a bunch of cowards and scared because they're all saying the same thing. If I don't show up and play the game, he'll be the one who punishes me and all the other white men who own all the other teams. They will punish us also. If ever there was a moment in sports history for black men to band together,
exactly,
I think that this would be that moment.
That
you would think
be
that.
It.
You would think it, and you'd be dead damn wrong, because we didn't band together for Trayvon Martin. We didn't band together for the Gina Six. We didn't band together. We haven't band together for Oscar Grant. Black men do not band together for anything that is worth having. Money, hose, clothes, and shoes. Cars, clothes, and hose. That's what we band together for in a group. And what I'm saying is that it's up to you and me and us and we listening to this broadcast and around the world tonight. We are what's going to turn things around and change things. Those guys are never going to do it. They don't want to stop the system. They don't want to overturn the system. They don't want to defeat the system. They just want to have a place in the system. That's all. That's all they want. I'll let you have the last word.
Mr. Black, I just want to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing, and I can't wait for 7 a.m. to come out, and Black first.
Now, are you on my Facebook or my friends list?
I'm on your Facebook. I'm on your friends list.
Okay, send me a message so I'll know who you are.
All right, will do.
Thank you very much for calling in with us here today, brother. Everybody who's actually out there doing something and whatnot, I want to know who those people are. Everybody else I'm not very concerned about. I want to know who the people are who are doing something. There will be an announcement coming very soon here regarding 7 a.m. and regarding what all of you can do to help us get the word out about it. I want us to make this go viral, everybody. I want every man, woman, and child in social media and mainstream media to know about 7 a.m. I want you to give this to your friends, your family, and everybody else. There will be an announcement coming up here soon because more important than anything, and I just want to speak to you honestly right now, more important than anything you might think that this might have to do with the broadcast or what we've been saying before, I want all of you, especially the young black people, I want you to think about what this documentary will mean for your lives. I want you to think about what this documentary and the ramifications of it will be for your life. If you are a young black person, and by young I mean age 30 and younger, there is nobody out there looking out for you. Nobody is. Illegal aliens are coming across the border from Mexico and building something to pass down to their children. Your parents built and left nothing to pass down to you. You are starting having to scrabble out a living from the dirt of the earth. That was what your parents did to you. That was what the civil rights generation did to you. That was what your forebears did to you. Talking about this, nobody is telling the story of what happened to young black people in America. Nobody's telling our story about what happened to us. This is the first media piece in history that actually tells the story of what happened to the current generation of black people and why you are the poorest generation of black people in the world. Nobody is telling this story. But it's pointless and it's worthless and it's useless if even you don't think it's worth getting involved for. Because I'm not a savior. I didn't float down from the heavens to save you. I'm just the one guy who got up and said, hey, let's save ourselves. That's who I am. But I'm not here to save you. I'm not here to fight you as you kick and scream and punch at me and say, hey, TBA, I thought you were going to save me. I'm the guy who is, all I'm trying to do is rally the troops. But I'm not here to save anybody. We all know it's wrong. We all know that the people standing in line for their Jordans are stupid, and it's wrong. We all know that the people who are out there fighting for their hair weaves and fighting over their hair weaves and fighting to steal them are wrong. We know that all the people watching Scandal are wrong. We know that all the people putting up their big booty white girl pictures are wrong. We know that all the people bowing down to kiss the ring of Donald Sterling and the NBA and the NFL and every other sport out there, while they do nothing for black empowerment, we know they're wrong. We know that the fact that our forebears built nothing for us and passed nothing down to us is wrong. We know that while everyone else is able to start from their infancy with something to build with, and we were given nothing but our hands, we know that that's wrong. And I'm saying, join me. We need your support. We need you to help us get the word out because the word is about to come down. and we will need your help to do this. Enough complaining about Mimi. Enough complaining about BET and World Star Hip Hop. Enough! Because that's not changing anything. But you're about to be given an opportunity to change it. And I want you to take that opportunity. Because this isn't about me. It has never been about me. When those people over there were mocking Black Empowerment and mocking Black First, that wasn't me they were mocking. It was you. When I talked about the Black community requires a Black man and a Black woman to build a Black family, and they mocked us, they weren't mocking me. They were mocking you. They were laughing at you. They were smiling for white supremacy and laughing and mocking Black empowerment. That's what they were doing. When it's easier to get them to talk about an NBA game and some slut in a sex video, but Black empowerment, they turn it off before they even turn it on. You know that that's wrong. I am asking you, starting tonight and going into the announcement, which will be coming here very soon, at the beginning of this week, top of this week, as a matter of fact. It won't be much longer now. I'm going to give out the announcement, and I'm going to ask every single person out there to join us in a concerted, unified effort to get the word out that for the first time ever, we have somebody who is actually speaking to what the problem is. And you know me. You've listened to my broadcast. You've listened to my videos. I spike and I strike the points the way you want them done. Uncompromising. It's time to let them know that we are not going to compromise, not anymore. That you sucked the blood out of us until there was nothing more to take, no more. That we are going to stand up for ourselves for once. That this time, it's going to be them who bows down to Black empowerment. I want us to remove Mimi from people's news feeds. I want us to remove coonery and buffoonery from people's timelines. I want the national media talking about us. I want you all to finally be able to turn on your television and your radio, to go to Yahoo, to go to CNN, to go to MSNBC, and to see them talking about Black empowerment, to see them talking about Black business and Black economics, because nobody is talking about that right now. I want us to finally, at long last, to change the conversation. That we're no longer talking about ancient history and intellectually masturbating over spiritualism and being distracted by sex and coonery and buffoonery and hip-hopism. I want us to finally get people to start talking about Black economic empowerment. Because after that, everything else falls into place. Everything. For those of you who are new here, the website is 7ammovie.com. 7ammovie.com. The name of the documentary is 7am. We're going to be talking to Shalimar Blakely of the Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware African American Chamber of Commerce, Dr. Umar Johnson, the Prince of Pan-Africanism, Morris Levin with the Philadelphia Stars Negro Leagues Museum. We're going to be talking to Brett Pulley, author of The Billion Dollar Bet, and Dean of the Scripps Howard School of Journalism at Hampton University. We're going to be talking to Alayla Bundles, the great-great-granddaughter of Madam C.J. Walker. We're going to be talking to Don Peebles of the Peebles Corporation. a man who's made millions, worth billions, and has a lot to say about black economic empowerment. And, of course, no documentary that claims to talk about black economic empowerment could confidently, properly, or legitimately do so without speaking to the godfather of black socioeconomics himself. Dr. Claude Anderson is going to be in the documentary giving us footage you've never seen before. This is the time. This is the hour. We're 7% of the population of California now. You think we have time to waste? They're running us out of California. They're running us out of Arizona. They're running us out of Colorado. They're running us out of Texas. You still think we have time to waste? The word is about to come down, brothers and sisters. It's about to come down. Just a little while longer. I need you to join us and to help us make this the biggest thing out there. The time for complaining is over. Complaining about Don Sterling isn't going to help us. Let's show them that we're done talking. Let's use our actions. Let's use this moment, this critical moment where everybody is looking at us to see how we're going to respond to these things. Let's use this moment to make a statement that we are not going to allow you to forget about us and to neglect us and to ignore us and to brutalize us. Not anymore. Let's show them that we showed up today to take our birthright back. We are here to take back our power. And we're not asking. Power is not requested. Power is relinquished. Because power is taken. Brothers and sisters, this is not about me. This is about you. Let's join together and show them that something that they thought was dead, blackness, black intelligence, black empowerment, let's show them that it's not dead. Not just yet, it's not. The time for talk is over. Let's make a statement. Not with our words, but with our actions. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, the fire next time. The fire next time. The fire next time. Next time is here.